2 years after the U.S. Constitution was signed in 1787, France underwent a revolution of its own, which soon evolved or devolved into what became known as the Reign of Terror. Many men, particularly aristocrats, fled to America to avoid the fate of the guillotine, and some had a great influence on our infant nation. Francois Furstenberg, an associate professor of history at Johns Hopkins University, details the lives of five of those men in his new book, When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation. It's published by the Penguin Press. I'm very pleased to welcome Professor Furstenberg to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
I don't remember studying any of these men in my American history courses in high school or college. Were they well-known during their time?
They were very well-known. These were some of the most well-known figures and important figures in French history. So, for instance, Noailles was the person he was Lafayette's brother-in-law, and he was the president of the French Constituent Assembly, which was writing a French constitution, when the Ancien Régime was formally abolished. And when they came over here to the United States and settled in Philadelphia, they were prized as sort of guests, and everybody wrote about them and talked about them.
Did they know each other?
Yes, they had all five of the people who I follow had served in the French Constituent Assembly. So all of them had been involved in drafting the first French Constitution.
And Noailles connected to a man who was important to the American Revolution. So there's a good reason he might have come here. But I was surprised that Talleyrand came here. He was Napoleon's right-hand man, wasn't he?
Yeah. He became, well, I mean, it was said of him, I forget the number exactly now, that he'd served in something like six regimes and betrayed them all. So you don't know whether he was really in favor of Napoleon, and Napoleon certainly later came to test him. But Talleyrand was here for 2 years in the United States, and he learned a lot about the United States, and he learned a lot about international trade, and he became very close friends with Alexander Hamilton. The two of them talked about politics and trade.
Did any of them play important roles in the French Revolution? Because these were all aristocrats, so you would have thought that they would have been in opposition to the revolution.
That's right. They were part of what one might call the kind of liberal nobility. That is to say, they were in favor of reforms. They were in favor of the revolution at the outset. So what they had in mind was something analogous to the British system of a kind of constitutional monarchy. They were opposed to the absolutist system of the old regime, and they hoped to establish something that would have a balance of power, something not unlike the United States Constitution with a strong executive.
Well, all of our founding fathers, the influential ones, were influenced by the Enlightenment, and I'm assuming that these men were also men of the Enlightenment.
Very much so. They all participated in the most important discussions in Paris at the time, in salons and reform movements.
Why then did the Jacobins put prices on their heads?
Well, the vision that they had, I would say, of France sort of fell apart. They wanted, as I said, a constitutional monarchy, but really the problem is that the monarch the monarch wasn't in favor of that. I mean, he resisted the early reforms that were put in place. I mean, these were major reforms. One would still call them revolutionary, but when the king fled, the idea of a constitutional monarchy became sort of untenable, and so the king was arrested and eventually executed, and these people were forced to flee. The center had, in a sense, disappeared.
Was America a logical place for them to go? They could have gone to any neighboring country. They could have gone to Africa. They could have gone to Haiti or a number of French colonies. Why the United States?
Well, some of them had connections here. Noailles had actually fought in the American Revolution, and he was the person who actually represented the French government at Cornwallis's surrender at Yorktown. So some of them, and he had been friends with Hamilton and some others.
And there were links, because the Treaty of Paris is what ended the American Revolution.
That's right. I mean, France and the United States were great allies at the time. France was the United States' first and most important ally, and there were many attempts at establishing a closer trading relationship between France and the United States. So, I mean, some of them had gone to England, and London was a natural place for them because they had friends in London, and as I said, they were part of this kind of liberal aristocracy. But when Britain and France went to war, they were kicked out of England and had to flee.
They all wound up in Philadelphia, which was then serving as the temporary capital of the United States while the District of Columbia was under construction. Why Philadelphia?
Philadelphia was the most important city in the United States at the time. It was the capital, as you just mentioned. It was the largest port. It was the largest city. It was the financial center of the United States. It was the cultural capital. It would have been the closest thing that the United States had to a Paris, if you want. I mean, it was nothing like Paris, but it would have been the closest thing, this kind of political, cultural, and economic capital wrapped into one.
Were they hoping to engage in American politics?
When they came here, they were, I would say, trying to take refuge. So they didn't involve themselves explicitly in American politics. They certainly had opinions, and they socialized with Jefferson and with Hamilton, and with Henry Knox and some major political figures. But no, they didn't directly get involved in American politics.
And did they socialize with each other?
They did. They did. They formed an intimate community in the heart of Philadelphia. These five aristocrats, they found comfort in that small community. They were surrounded by a much larger community of Francophones, of people. Tens of thousands of refugees fled the Haitian Revolution and the French Revolution and came to the United States. And there were waves of refugees in Philadelphia and in all the port cities of the United States at this point.
Were they helped by the fact that people like Jefferson were Francophiles?
Absolutely, absolutely. The United States, this is sort of a forgotten era in kind of French-American relations, if you want to think about it that way. The United States was turned intensely towards France. There were still many still harbored bad feelings towards Great Britain, against whom they just fought a war, or recently fought a war. And French culture was a very powerful influence, French politics, French everything.
French taste transformed Philadelphia's marketplace, which soon became filled with high-end goods like mustards and perfumes. Why was French culture so appealing to Americans who saw themselves as a plain people?
Well, Philadelphia was the mercantile capital, and there were many recently wealthy Americans who lived in Philadelphia, and they turned to France like elites around the world really turned to France, or at least around around Europe turned to France for cues in how to dress, in fashion, in high culture, in taste. And because of the closer trading relationships between the United States and France in this period, they were able to import goods that had never before been available, and it was an exciting time for Americans.
You mentioned that a lot of people were speaking French. Did all of these men only speak French, or were they capable of speaking decent English?
It's a very hard question to recover because, of course, we don't have recordings of them. I suspect, I know that Talleyrand learned to speak a pretty good English. There were references to that. I think that one of my characters, Liancourt, probably never managed to speak very good English. There were references to the halting English that he spoke.
He was a descendant of the famous aphorist La Rochefoucauld.
He was descended from one of the great French families, one of the most important noble families in France.
And I don't know some of these other people. Constantin François de Chasseboeuf, he was the Count of Auvergne. He was a well-known writer in France.
He was. He was a travel writer. He'd been to the Middle East, and he'd written about his travels in the Middle East. And Napoleon was very influenced by his writings on Egypt. And according to some scholars, Napoleon even used his writings as kind of handbook for his invasion of Egypt.
On the other hand, George Washington had his presidential mansion in Philadelphia decorated in a French style.
That's right.
Was that his decision or Martha's?
It was his decision. He sent out instructions to Gouverneur Morris, who was a friend of his in Paris, to shop for him and to pick up some appropriate furniture for the presidential mansion.
My guest is François Furstenberg. He's written a book called When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation. The United States wasn't speaking French.
No, I mean, it's a sort of metaphorical title, but there were many people who spoke French in the United States. They were turned towards France. And in a sense, part of what I want to say, I think, with that title is that our history is, in a sense, bilingual history. I mean, that is to say, we need to think about the relationships between the United States and other parts of the world to really understand our own history.
Well, France owned parts of what became the United States, but these men had nothing to do with that, did they?
Well, they
Louisiana.
Absolutely, they became centrally involved actually in French attempts to reestablish itself in North America. So France had ceded Louisiana after the Seven Years' War in 1763, but they never gave up on ideas of reestablishing a French empire in North America. And when Talleyrand went back to France after his time in the United States, he promoted this idea that France really needed a new base in North America. And so he was part of Napoleon's attempt to reconquer Louisiana, to retake Louisiana.
On the other hand, Napoleon winds up selling Louisiana to Jefferson.
Yeah, that's right. That's where
was Talleyrand involved in that as well?
He was. He was very involved in the negotiations of the Louisiana purchase, or the Louisiana sale, as he would have thought about it. And that was entirely wrapped up with the French Caribbean. That is to say, Napoleon had sought to send an army over to take Louisiana. But that army, before it reached Louisiana, it was supposed to put the slaves in Haiti, the former slaves in Haiti, who had freed themselves, back into slavery. And the French failed at that. The Haitian slaves emerged victorious and destroyed France's army. And because of that, Napoleon was never able to take Louisiana back, and he sold it to Jefferson.
On the other hand, the United States didn't support the slave revolt in Haiti, which probably had a major impact on what happened to Haiti afterward. George Washington was horrified, and I guess pretty much all of the slave owners were scared silly.
They were terrified of it, and Washington and Jefferson, both of them slave owners, were terrified by the specter of Haiti. Neither of them wanted to see France reestablish itself in North America, but the idea of slaves freeing themselves, of creating a revolution and creating a new nation was a terrifying one, establishing a navy right on their doorstep.
Did the Francophilia, was it limited to Philadelphia, or did it spread to other parts of the country?
I think it was all over the country. I mean, there were, especially after the Revolution, when many Americans felt enormous gratitude towards France. Lafayette was a great hero of Americans at the time, almost on par with George Washington.
But also Pulaski and Kosciuszko, and yet we don't hear about many people speaking Polish.
Well, Poland didn't intervene in the way that France did. I mean, it was really the French king who supplied the munitions and the navy and the troops and the financial support to achieve American independence.
Your subtitle is Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation. How did they help shape the United States?
Well, there are ways in which they explicitly shaped the United States, such as the Louisiana Purchase. We were talking about that a little bit. Many of them got involved in attempts by France to reconquer, to retake Louisiana, and they were funneling information back to the United States. But in a larger sense, I think it's the way that we can understand American history through their eyes. I think it gives us a very different perspective to think about this really critical period in American history when it's looked at through these eyes of these French foreigners.
What was their response to events like the Whiskey Rebellion in the early 1790s?
There were many people who feared that the uprising in Pennsylvania, in central Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania, was a French plot to foment revolution in the United States. A Jacobin plot, that is to say, a revolutionary plot to foment revolution in the United States. And there were many fears among Federalists, George Washington, among others, who thought that there was an attempt to really undermine the government in the United States.
Were they happy when the Jay Treaty was signed in 1795, which established peace with Britain?
No, this was a real turning point in Franco-American relations in the 1790s.
Because Britain was France's enemy.
Britain was France's enemy. They were at war with each other. And the United States, according to the Treaty of Amity and Commerce that they'd signed with France during the Revolution, the United States was obliged to take the side of France, to support France in its operations against Great Britain, that is to say, provide supplies and naval bases. And the United States declared neutrality in this war. They didn't want to get involved. And so when they signed a treaty with Great Britain, this was seen as a great betrayal, a great gesture of ingratitude towards the French who had helped them so instrumentally.
But weren't Americans horrified by what they were seeing during the French Revolution? It didn't go the same way the American Revolution went. They had the Reign of Terror. A lot of heads rolled, literally, and nothing like that happened here.
No,
people were forced to leave. The Tories were forced to go into exile, but there wasn't mass killing.
Well, there was no one suggested setting up a guillotine on the streets of Philadelphia or anything like that. But there was a great deal of violence in the American Revolution. We easily forget that, and I think I would say that the French Revolution was the most divisive event in American history at this period. There were very differing opinions. Some of them articulated the position you just did, and others thought that the French Revolution and the American Revolution were two elements of one movement and continued to support it throughout the period.
Did any of the five stay here for the rest of their lives?
No, they all left. They all left.
Because Napoleon made it France more hospitable in their eyes?
That's right. That's right. The government turned. The Jacobins that fell, the Robespierre fell, and it was more welcoming towards émigrés, and they all returned to France, except for Noailles, who went down to the Caribbean to fight against the Haitian Revolution, and he died in the Caribbean.
Had they been unhappy in the United States?
They had mixed experiences here. They felt quite alienated. They had this intimate French community, as I said. They thought that the United States had was becoming, over the course of this period, too pro-British. But they learned a lot about the country, and they invested heavily in lands. And they many of them helped rebuild their fortunes while they were here.
Well, they were coming here in the wake of the French and Indian Wars, where many of the Americans who had fought the British had also fought the French earlier. George Washington, for example.
This is a very tumultuous period because there had been really over a century of bitter warfare between the British colonists, who were then British, and the French. And all of a sudden, with the American Revolution, this intense anti-French feeling is turned on its head when France intervenes on behalf of the Americans against the British. So this was a period of shifting alliances. But the period that I'm looking at in the 1790s, there is a really intense and positive feeling towards France in general, towards the French nation. As I said, there are bitter differences of opinion over the French Revolution, but warm feeling towards France.
Why do you think it changed? Because Americans now find it very hard to speak French.
Well, there's a long history of behind that. I think it's hard for me to know. I mean, when the United States entered World War I and sent troops to Europe, there was a real memory of this. People talked about going to repay Lafayette's debt. And I think it changed. I would say it changed probably after World War II. I mean, one would want to look into it a little more closely. But I would guess after World War II, when France no longer appears to be France no longer is a global power in the way it had been throughout the 18th, 19th centuries and before, and people sort of forget about this important role.
Well, we have forgiven the French. We're no longer talking about freedom fries.
Yeah, we forgive them for the Iraq War, in a sense. But I was thinking during that period how many parallels there were to American neutrality in the 1790s. This sense, the French had this sense of ingratitude, had the sense that Americans were so ungrateful for all the assistance they had supported them. And Americans were saying almost the exact thing about France, how we liberated them in World War II and they're so ungrateful now.
François Furstenberg will be speaking and signing books at the Free Library of Philadelphia tomorrow at 7:30. That's on Vine Street. For more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. He is Associate Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University. And his book, When the United States Spoke French, Five Refugees Who Shaped a Nation, is published by the Penguin Press. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.